Yes, there is a question by Chris Dolby.
So I did not understand exactly what the signature of this stochastic background is. Can you elaborate a bit more on that?
Yes, maybe it's better if I can write something on, yeah. But, okay. Okay, the general idea is that you can describe this in several ways, but a possible way is to tell that at last in the space-time volume which is around us, you can expand you can expand the gravitational wave stream in this way. It is a sum of different modes, which are, if you want, plane waves around us. And this is sum like this. You first have a sum over all the possible wave vector. And for each wave vector, you have a sum over all the possible polarization. So at the end, you have a coefficient for k and a, a tensor, a polarization tensor, which give you the correct structure, and depends also on the, and at the end, you have this kind of thing. Okay. Now, the point is that this is a very general expansion of, but you can evaluate this for a given specific model. And the information about your specific model is inside this coefficient here. The point is that you do not have direct knowledge about this coefficient, and you have to model this in a, in some sense in a statistical way. So you can say something about what are the statistical properties of this coefficient. For example, you can add some constraint. For example, it is very reasonable to assume that the stochastic background is stationary from a point of view of our observation, because the time scale for the variation are at best the typical astrophysical scale evolution, and it is much longer than the observation scale. So at the end, you have this that you can describe like a kind of stochastic process. Now, if you have here a single detector, this detector is this measure, something that can be written in this way. There is this tensor, and this is the strain evaluated here. And this tensor contains the information about the geometry of the apparatus. As a matter of fact, by the way, it depends on the time, because the interferometer is on the Earth, and so it is moved together with the Earth. And you have this for Virgo, and this will be the detector tensor of Virgo, and this is the strain evaluated at the Virgo position. And you have this also for one of the detector of LIGO. And so on and so forth. Now, first question, can I measure this with a single detector? The point is the following. In principle, yes, because what is the signature? You have your detector. If there is no stochastic background, you will have a level of noise, which is just level of noise of your detector. If there is this additional contribution, you will measure an additional contribution to the noise. This is in principle. Of course, this contribution is weak, and if you do not have a perfect control about the level of the noise of your apparatus, and you don't have this, this is in practical not feasible. So the general idea is that Okay, that it is tired. So the general idea is that you have two different detectors, and you have independent measurement. You measure here and there the sum of the noise of the apparatus plus the particular projection of the strain field in this point. And the same in this other point. Note that the projection here and there of the signal is different. So you will not have full coherence between the two signals. But there will be some level of coherence that will be increased, of course, if the detector are near more than the wavelength of the signal that you are looking at. Of course, if the detector are near, you can suspect that there will be also correlated instrumental noise, and you should not go too far in this direction. And also this level of coherence will increase if the detector are aligned in such a way that you are measuring the same projection here and there. Okay. The point is that at this point, essentially, at the level of Gaussian stochastic process, you evaluate the coherence between these two signals. And if there is only instrumental noise, and if the instrumental noise is assumed to be uncorrelated between the two detectors, which is not a completely trivial point, you will get something in which in the zero hypothesis of a sense signal has a zero average. And if the signal is present, the expectation value will be different from zero. Of course, you can estimate this expectation value, and so you will have some error. But one important point is that in this kind of analysis, you accumulate the signal, and if you increase the measurement time, you will get more information inside your detector, and the estimate of the correlation will be near the theoretical estimation up to a statistical error which will be improved with the inverse square root of the measurement time. So that's the basic idea.
Okay, so as far as I understand, then this is very search for a very generic, maybe not very, but some sort of quite generic signal. So I wonder, in this point of view, how robust is the noise model that one can prepare? One can build these detectors, and so I'm now wondering. I have many questions about how you actually build this, how confident you are about your noise model, and whether it's, for example, mostly data-driven, how much is it data-driven, simulation-driven? Because I guess it's fundamental, right, if you want to search for something.
Yeah.
I always think about it really in the Fourier space you always show.
It's also
very complicated.
The point is the following, that if you do a correlation analysis, you have a basic signature. Of course, the point is that you have to exclude and this requires independent study that there are strongly correlated instrumental noise between the detectors. But in this sense, if you can exclude that, the analysis is by itself quite robust. In the sense that, it converges to the correct estimate, which is different from zero, and so. Of course, you have to put a lot of veto on your signal, because the simple analysis is the correct one if, for example, you assume that your noise is really stationary, if you assume that your noise is really a Gaussian process, and this is not the case. So you have first to do a data quality classification of the data stream, using several criteria, but at the end, after putting some veto on the time series that you have, your time series, you classify it in several stretch short pieces, you veto some of them because maybe at some point there is a strong non-stationarity of the noise, but at the end you use the best information that you have to evaluate an estimate of this cross-correlation. And maybe the question is also, there is also another point here. What is the information that completely characterizes your stochastic background from a statistical point of view? And if you can assume that your stochastic background is Gaussian, which is the case when you have a very large superposition of a lot of events, the only thing that is relevant is the power spectrum. Of course, this power spectrum can depend, in principle, on the direction if you have assume that you can have anisotropy, and you can complicate the picture as far as you want. There are also more complicated scenarios, in particular for astrophysical stochastic background, in which the signal is not Gaussian, because the overlap between the different contributions, there is some overlap between different contributions, but it is not so large. And when you see this kind of stochastic process, you don't see a Gaussian process, but something which is more similar in some sense. It interpolates from a stochastic Gaussian process to a kind of a shot noise. There is some superposition, it is called the popcorn noise, which is a bit intermittent. And to characterize this one, it is a bit more difficult, and the second order is no more Gaussian, so there are information hidden also in higher order momenta. I don't know if this is...
Okay, other questions? Yes, Anna Maria Hell.
So I'm curious, so, what is the order of magnitude of the events that you have observed so far?
You mean order of magnitude? In
yeah,
the sense
how many have you observed? Yeah.
The total number of events is 90.
90?
This assume, okay, first we have some threshold that we put in terms of the quality and the statistical confidence of this event. And it depends essentially by two different factors which are related. One is the signal to noise ratio, which is typically about 10 or 8, it depends. And the second classification is based on the false alarm probability. And we require for this catalog of 90 events that we propose as event with high confidence, we have a false alarm rate which should be less than maybe 1/10^4 year.
Okay.
And that's the two main criteria. If you do that, we get the 90 events that we think are confident from a statistical point of view.
Okay.
There are sub-threshold events. We do not give detailed information about that in a catalog, but in principle, this also can be used in a statistical sense to get information for population.
Becky, Genova. Among the last transparencies you presented, there was one which was very fast, I mean, anyway, and which referred, as long as I understand, to the stochastic background. And this one is special because there was a small star with a written pulsar.
You mean?
Am I correct?
What is the slide?
Yeah, this one.
This one.
No.
Yeah.
No, it was the first one. This one.
Okay. You mean what?
This star, black star, pulsar limit.
Ah, okay, okay.
This is interesting because this does not refer to your. Is a measure completely independent
yes.
of your detectors.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, a kind of control.
Yeah.
Like me, yeah.
This is a measure that is done using the nature as an interferometer. You have a large number of pulsars which have a very high stability in their timing, in the timing of their electromagnetic pulse, and can be used as a clock. So if you measure the time of arrival of this clock, you can check if there is some fluctuation. And this fluctuation, as it happened in LISA or also at a different scale in an interferometer, can depend from the fact that during the propagation, this electromagnetic signal interacted with some kind of gravitational wave inside. Of course, the arm of this interferometer provided by the nature is much larger. And this is the reason why
the frequency is
in the low frequency region. But it is, as you said, it is an independent limit. It, in principle, can be improved at will unless you touch the basic limit of the stability of the natural fluctuation of the timing of the pulsar. But it is independent, and as I said yesterday very fastly, this is something that probably is very near to give us some claim for the existence of a background of gravitational in that region.
Thank you very much.
Doreen?
Hi, it's Christian Doreen. I have a question on the measurement of the Hubble rate. It was maybe a bit quick for me. Do you also depend on other light measurements that include light? Because then you would also have like a gravitational lensing effect in the measurement of the Hubble rate, right?
Okay, it is an independent possible way to look at. You can look at this in two different ways. First, in principle, it can be a byproduct of an analysis of gravitational lensing effect on gravitational wave signal. This has not been pursued until now. Another problem, you can see this as an issue in the sense that you have to be sure that when you use some kind of event to give an estimate of the Hubble ratio, this is not changed by possible lensing effect. So there is a dependence, but the basic scheme, you assume essentially undisturbed propagation of the signal from the source to you, and undisturbed in the sense that follow the geodetic in the cosmological model that you want to test. So in this sense, you can look at this as two different, in principle, way to get information about this kind of thing.
That's very interesting because we had in our seminar for a few months ago, a talk by, I think his name was Obima Umar. He wrote in February a paper solving the Hubble tension, and I think he used some local under or over density, so that he said that there is additional lensing, and that's why you can solve the Hubble tension. So your way to measure the Hubble tension could maybe like probe his idea.
Yeah, of course, as you can see, we are very far to have enough sensitivity to tell you something about this tension and to discriminate between the two different classical determination of the Hubble parameter. But as I said, this is something that will improve especially in the next generation of detectors.
Thank you.
Anthony Killen.
Can you show the slide with the rate of detection that increases?
Yes. This one.
Yeah, it looks like the rate is starting to increase before the upgrade. Can you explain why?
I don't think it is significant. This is just the fact that you are here reasoning at the level of a few events. And so it is a bit a factor that, of course, the sensitivity is not constant during the run. And so there will be maybe a final time in which it is much favorable from this point of view. But I don't think that this particular increase is particularly relevant at statistical level.
Okay.
Afanasia Angelopoulou, I would like to ask first as a follow-up about the stochastic background. After we have seen that it's not just due to noise, could we separate the contribution of the different sources and see which would be from cosmology?
In principle, yes, of course. This is possible if you have a mixture of different Gaussian stochastic background. The only angle that you have to do this kind of separation is a theoretical model about the spectra, the spectral contribution of each part of the. So you can try to modelize what you see using a combination, a linear combination of the spectra that are foreseen for the different models that you expect are involved. For example, in the frequency range. That is relevant for Virgo, it is probably enough to test a combination of a few power law. And at this level, this is the only thing that you can do. To put this in a perspective, this will be a really important problem, for example, for LISA, or also for ET. Because in LISA, you for sure will be sensitive enough to see astrophysical background, for example, for coalescence or binary white dwarf. But at this point, this will become, in some sense, a noise for you, because it will cover the contribution of cosmological background. And so here, it is also a really important problem to try to disentangle the different contribution. There are more refined techniques that are under study. For example, if one of the two contributions is not Gaussian, you can try to have more handle to do a clever separation. But this is for the future. So there are some research about this, but it is work in progress.
Okay, thank you. And also, could you explain a bit more the echo and the ring down effect, because I didn't really...
Well, the general idea, I can't enter into the details of the various more or less speculative theoretical model that give you this point. But the idea is that the structure of the horizon is not as you expect in classical general relativity. And so it is not using an old paradigm, a membrane which allow you to enter, but anything can exit from this. And in general way, which is the perspective of our search at the moment, you can try to give a general phenomenological parametrization of this phenomena, just by trying, for example, to modify the potential which comes out when you linearize and linear perturbation write down the equation which has to be followed by the perturbation around the static solution. Or you can do something which is a bit more phenomenological and add phenomenological essentially. At some point treat what is beyond, inside a given radius, as a black box that you describe with some reflection and transmission coefficient, which maybe can depend on the frequency. And in this way, you, in some sense, are constructing a cavity. A cavity which is between this phenomenological description of what happened near the horizon and the usual barrier near the light ring. And if you have a cavity, you can have a rich phenomenology of the possible signal that can be obtained. You can have the case of echo, the case in which a pulse is reflected back and forth between the two, and a part is leaking outside, and you observe it as a sequence of pulse. Depending on the frequency and regime and the kind of modern and the way in which, for example, if you have something which is has a reflectivity very near to one, which is the case, which is probably not the case, you will have a signal which should be relevant also now at the current level of sensitivity. You have a strong and small peak of your signal, and you will be able to exclude in this phenomenological model a reflection coefficient very near to one. If the reflection coefficient goes to zero, which is in some sense to the usual general relativity case, these peaks which are due to the echo reduce in amplitude. At some level you will be below the current sensitivity, maybe not the sensitivity of the next generation of the detector. So at the moment we can maybe exclude some parameter space for this phenomenological model, and with the third generation we will do better.
Thank you.
Yes, so I have a question related to the difference between neutron star, neutron star, and neutron star black hole merger. So maybe you said it yesterday, but I'm not sure that I understood. So in the current analysis, you make a difference between these two kinds of events by using the fact that there is a maximal mass for a neutron star, or do you really see in the waveform features that are different for these two events from the fact that there is no tidal deformability for a black hole?
They are two different. They are related effects in the sense that basically now we are looking at the masses. Of course, the information that we got about the masses come from the shape of the signal. Mm-hmm. So we are looking and we are extracting information about the masses from the shape of the waveform. In principle, in the waveform, you can search signature of tidal deformation effect. Mm-hmm. And this has been done, but at least in this case, there is not a particular significance. Okay. So you were not able to have some hint about tidal deformation effect.
So this is, yeah, thanks.
This is Bastu Sharma. Can you comment on possible detectors in outer space? So what are the kind of signals we would be able to detect there that we can't detect on Earth?
There is a class of events which is common for Earthbound detector and detector in space. Of course, for example, coalescence. Coalescence, you will be able to look at coalescence also with a space interferometer, but in a different phase of the history, or if the masses are very, very large. And in this case, you can also have access to the full story. An interesting possibility is that if you have LISA and maybe ET on Earth, you can do something which is called the dual band search, in which you see the signature of some coalescing binary in LISA, and you know at some point this will disappear because the frequency will increase and will exit from the detection band of LISA, but you know theoretically that after some amount of time you will have there a coalescence that will be seen by ET. Apart about this curiosity, it is also important because you know in advance at what time the coalescence will be, and you have the event that has been localized in advance. And so this is really important from the point of view of multi-messenger analysis. Other things that can be seen, of course, various kinds of stochastic background, which will be much more easy to see in a space experiment. And you will be also access to some peculiar source, for example, the EMRI, which are a system in which there is a large difference in mass between the two black holes, and which I say something about this yesterday, but anyway, you have a small body which are orbiting around a large black hole, and you have a signal which is very long in time, so you can study it for a very long period of time, but it is in the low frequency region. And this is another interesting signal that you can find there, essentially.
Thank you.
Well, you have asked many questions. I think that we are running really over time. So we thank the speaker again.